Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 15th of September, 2021, Wednesday. Happy Wednesday to you, hump day. We're already halfway to the weekend. Holy Frank Tanana. Things are just flying through. Make the intro as quickly as possible so we can get to all the things. Don't forget to go to getthetea.com and use promo code Derek at checkout for free fast shipping. Get your regular, make you feel good. And don't forget about the Week in Effin' Review at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Somebody had the great idea of bringing back the signed book contests, the drawings, but using, you have to be a Patreon to do that. And I thought that was a pretty good idea. Might start that next week with my book. I got a bunch of those sitting around. And I got a bunch of other books sitting around. Most of my books, signed books, are in boxes, but I can bust them open. We can give some really good signed books out there. So keep that in mind. Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. And of course, getthetea.com for Life Change Tea to change your life. Promo code Derek. Now on with the show. We have lots of things to talk about. There's plenty of ground to cover on today because the left never rests. The left never, ever rests. They're out there. We'll get into the gala. AOC wearing tax the rich across her butt, which, you know, is novel for her. She had to pull her head out of there to have it be able to be effectively written there. So it's the first time she's seen sunlight in some time. Going to a rich... Well, no, I don't want to start with that. It's not worth starting with. But it is worth mocking, and we will mock it roundly. I want to start, I guess, today with the idea of travel freely within the United States of America. That is something that for your entire life, you have apparently taken for granted. It is not even taken for granted. The concept of your freedom to travel being hindered, infringed upon in any way, shape, or form seemed so foreign that it never occurred to you that somebody would try to do it, could try to do it, would think it was a good idea. But now we are at a point where this is commonplace. The speculation about this. President Fauci was on Morning Joe this morning. And they had and it's kind of funny, the menagerie of people that they have over at Morning Schmo. There's this British BBC person, I don't know where she works now, it doesn't really matter, name's Catty Kay. Catty, not Kathy, Catty, K-A-T-T-Y, K-A-Y. She's, of course, a left-wing Brit, because everybody in the media is a left-wing Brit. And she was part of the little gaggle of people who were allowed to speak to President Fauci today. She was honored to be able to speak to President Fauci. And she brought up this idea. Now, there's a bit of irony in her question here. Actually, quite a bit of irony in her question here. She's a British, I don't know if she's an American citizen or what. I'd like to think that we have better taste than that. But then again, we don't have better taste than that as a country. But she was asking President Fauci about the concept of maybe if we want people to get the shot, maybe we need to get a little more serious and forbid people from traveling within the continental United States of America. Now, you can't really go to most places in the world right now, vaccinated or otherwise. And for some weird reason, Joe Biden has instituted travel restrictions against countries with incredibly high vaccination rates because they're European, largely, and has not instituted travel restrictions on countries with very low vaccination rates because they tend not to be European. And you can just march across the southern border anytime you want. You come from any third world hellhole, not only where COVID is rampaging, but other communicable diseases. And you'd be welcomed with open arms by a Democrat there. Figure out the logic behind that one. There is no logic behind that one. But that's the reality of it. You want to go to someplace around the world and you're not some rich celebrity? Good luck. Good luck. We know how that works out. You can travel. There is a way to travel. It's just not easy to do. And it depends on where you want to go. Caddy K wants to make that even more. I mean, they just opened the border with Canada, for God's sake. Caddy K wants to make that more difficult, especially for the people who are unvaccinated, as a way to push people to get vaccinated. It is something to behold, to put mildly. But listen to this woman, because she's talking about how she's traveled around Europe recently. Now, she should not be allowed to be here, theoretically, if her own rules are put in place. But I just want to, I want you to hear her question, and then we'll get to President Fauci's answer, which leaves a lot to be desired as well.
We know that the virus travels when people move around the country. Don Beyer, the Democratic congressman from Virginia, has a bill proposing that people traveling within the United States on airplanes and trains should either be vaccinated or provide proof of a negative COVID test. This is very common practice now in Europe. I've just been traveling all over Europe. You can't get on a plane without having some kind of proof that you're negative. It seems to me crazy that a year and a half into this, I can still get on a plane to Boston or California and nobody's going to check me. Do you think that needs to change?
I can still get on a plane from Boston to California, and nobody's checking me, nobody's doing anything. Do you think that needs to change, mate? Should that change? It's odd to me that anybody be able to travel freely throughout a country. What kind of abuse must you have suffered as a child to think that way? I shudder to think about it. It's probably very disturbing, but honest to God. Now, as an American, Caddy K, I don't know if she's an American citizen now, but she certainly, even if she was a convert, she's got the accent. She's a British citizen most of her life, probably at the most a dual citizen. She wouldn't really understand America. She never probably will. She doesn't want to. She hangs out with the Morning Joe crowd, so that's not really going to instill what America is to anybody. She wouldn't understand how ridiculous that concept is. I tell you all the time. I use the Australia example, but the UK is in the same boat. They are not like us because we share a common language and a lot of cultural overlaps from a perspective regarding personal and individual liberty. We're nothing alike. Nothing alike. And you got to understand that. So the Brits over there, they can go to jail for things that they tweet, for thoughts that they have. They cover up massive rape gangs of teenage girls, grooming gangs by Muslim men, and pretend that they didn't happen because they're afraid of the potential backlash. They are further down the road toward becoming a college campus as a country than we are. We're headed down that road, but they're further down it. So the idea of looking at Americans and going, well, you just shut up. You don't get to travel. You haven't gotten, you haven't done what I want you to do. So you don't get to travel. It doesn't seem fascistic to them. It just seems right and righteous. It's bizarre. They look at anything a conservative does. Well, you're a bunch of fascists. You're a bunch of fascists. What are we doing here? We just are saying that taxes are too high. Fascists think taxes are too high. Like, I don't think your understanding of what fascism is really all that accurate. Yeah, that's exactly what a fascist would say. Okay. They're not worth talking to, because you're never going to convince them, but they are worth listening to so that you can know what your enemy is up to and know what normal people's brains, particularly young people's brains, are being infected with. You want to talk about a communicable disease? You want to talk about a pandemic? Look at what liberals are saying and look at the people who believe what liberals are saying. So Catty Kay asked President Fauci, why don't we get rid of travel for people who, we can't place them under house arrest on a federal level. Only states can do that. But we can prevent them from leaving their states, and then maybe some Democratic governors will prevent them from ever leaving the house again. It would be wonderful. Utopia. Keep in mind, still, the vast majority of people who are not vaccinated are black and brown. Catty Kay is whiter than Elizabeth Warren, which is saying something. And Dr. Fauci is, of course, white as they all, was white as they come. A clean sheet of paper, that guy's skin is. And they're talking about essentially limiting the movements of black and brown people. They're doing it under the guise of, it's all Trump supporters. But the data shows that to be false. The data shows that the vast majority of people who are unvaccinated are black and brown people. So Democrats, again, they've never changed their objective. They've only changed their tactics. So here comes President Fauci's response. As an American, you would think, and somebody who's made, who's the highest paid government employee in the entire federal government, they might go, well, you know, this is the United States of America. We have freedoms. We have, you can't restrict people traveling. You can't place them under state arrest as much as you might like to, Catty. And it's rather bizarre that you as a foreigner would be so gleefully embraced by an American media outlet to come in and weigh in on American politics or as a new American, whatever the hell you are. I don't know. But instead, Dr. Fauci says, God, I wish we could do that. And we might. We're not there yet. Listen to him make that argument, make that statement, whatever.
Well, that's under consideration, certainly. I mean, I have been asked that question and it actually got some play in the press when I made the answer. I think that if, in fact, it is seriously considered, it's on the table, we're not there yet. In fact, if you look at the 6-point program that the president came out with a couple of days, what we were talking about with travel was doubling the fines of people who, in fact, are traveling and don't get tested. And I believe that the idea about requiring vaccination for travel is something that is on the table for discussion. It has not been decided yet.
Yeah, you like those rights you got there. By the way, Fauci doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. What Biden announced in his big speech at his Nuremberg rally was that if you take your if you do not comply with mask mandates on travel, not vaccination mandates, that the fines are doubled. So it's not, there's no testing requirement. There's not, it's just if you don't wear the mask. And he also talked about the people beating up the flight attendants, which, you know, fine them. I don't have a problem with that. If you're being a jerk with anybody, you should absolutely be punished for it. I'd also like to see, however, since everybody has a camera in their hands, I'd like to see a similar sort of fine and treatment toward the flight attendants who get overly aggressive with people. Now, if the flight attendant comes up and says the rules are the rules, I don't make them, I just have to enforce them, and you have to put your mask on, and you start talking about how you're going to beat the crap out of them and you don't need to this and you're an idiot, then, yeah, that's on you. Somebody will capture that on film. But if a 2-year-old is fighting while trying to eat some Jell-O with the mask in between bites, and you come up and power trip on them and want to throw them off the plane, you're the problem. You're the problem. You should have some common sense, too. So you want to find people who get belligerent on planes? I'm all for it. But those people who get belligerent on planes facing fines should also include the flight attendants. But it's good to know that our president and our real president, President Fauci, are still considering whether or not to impose travel restrictions, making it impossible to travel. Now, if you watch these people, Catty Kay has just been all over Europe, she says. Why isn't she in quarantine? Well, I had to show proof of vaccination. Well, what have we been told about vaccination? Vaccination doesn't mean you can't get COVID. Doesn't mean you can't carry COVID. Doesn't mean you can't spread COVID. So you could be wildly infected with COVID even still. We're told that the gestation period between exposure and showing symptoms can be as much as 14 days. They kind of used to say it was up to 21 days, but that went away. They don't have any proof of anything otherwise, but they don't care. They don't really need proof. But it's 14 days where you're supposed to isolate if you have been exposed or maybe have been exposed or if your kid has been exposed, 10 to 14 days in isolation, and then you can resume life a little bit at that point. Why isn't Catty Kay like that? Why is it just one negative test when she hops on a flight between Rome and London and she's good to go? Yet she comes back here and starts barking out commands that other Americans need to be restricted. Other Americans shouldn't be allowed to travel. It's just not right. It's too dangerous. You must be vaccinated. Well, again, there are restrictions on the vaccinated already as well. If the vaccines mean what the vaccines are supposed to mean, then there shouldn't be any restrictions on anybody. If somebody is traveling who is unvaccinated, they shouldn't have any impact on your life whatsoever because you're vaccinated. Nobody can ever explain that. And you would think that somebody in the entire clown car that is MSNBC, when they have access to President Fauci, might bring that up. So what do you care? What does it matter? If you're vaccinated, what do you care if your neighbor isn't vaccinated? What do you do? Are you sneaking over to their house and licking their doorknobs? Are they sneaking over to your house and sneezing on your bread? Like, what do you care? There's no good answer for that because they have no idea. They have no idea what they're talking about. All right, so I was looking. I had to know. I looked it up about Catty Kay. I don't know what she does now. She's ex-BBC. Why is she still on MSNBC? As a journalist, I don't know. I'll never know. But it turns out that in 2021, she became a Swiss citizen because her father, who died in January of 2021, was Swiss. So, again, you really have to wonder why. Why in the hell are you weighing in on what's going on in the United States of America? Can you be a triple citizen? I don't think you can be a triple citizen. I know you can have dual citizenship, but if you can just rack up passports. Unless you're a spy, I don't think you can just rack up passports. But yeah, this is who the left looks to. A 56-year-old Brit-Swiss who really doesn't like this country, isn't a fan of the people, and would desperately love to see us placed under house arrest, not allowed to travel, not allowed to go anywhere. And President Fauci is like, well, yeah, no, we're looking at that. We're definitely looking at that. And then we got the Surgeon General of the United States. I want to play you this clip. I'm not going to try to pronounce this dude's name. I would get it all kinds of wrong. But he's the Surgeon General. He was asked why on CNN by Dana Bash yesterday, why aren't the media, is there of one mind? Because you got MSNBC pushing for travel restrictions. Look, we've got to find new and creative ways to punish the unvaccinated. And CNN simultaneously is going, we need to ask everybody we can, why aren't we punishing the unvaccinated more? So here's Dana Bash and the attorney or the Surgeon General of the United States of America talking about why they don't punish people more and how they desperately would like to. But it's a clash of liberal priorities. Kind of funny, actually.
But why not mandate?
If you are vaccinated.
Why not do a mandate there, just like you've done in the expanded new protocols that the president announced last week?
Well, look, and certainly, you know, that's a reasonable question to ask. But one of the things we have to consider with every decision we make is the equity concerns as well. And we know that when it comes to mandating vaccines for travel, there are important issues around equity that would have to be worked out. To ensure that people, for example, if they had to travel in the case of an emergency to see a relative who got sick, would be able to do that, even if, you know, they weren't vaccinated. We need to find a safe way for that to happen. So there are important considerations there that we need to weigh.
Equity. Equity. That's it. The only thing that allows you to leave your house still to travel within the continental United States of America as a free American is that they haven't found a way to get around the equity thing. That is, if you're playing the home game, passive acknowledgement of what I just said, that the vast majority of the unvaccinated are black and brown people. See, there's your equity problem. It would disproportionately hurt black and brown people. Democrats like to do that. They'd love to do that. They base their whole existence on doing that. But they'd like to be a little more subtle about it. So they're trying to find a way around that. Desperately. They can't just say, white people, you can't travel. Although they'd love to. So they're trying to find a way to scramble around that. That is why liberals' own stupidity has painted them into a corner on one particular issue of infringing on your rights, that they would desperately love to do that. Yeah, you love to see it when it happens, occasionally when it happens, but it's scary as hell that they're feverishly working for a workaround. That's scary. So while the Surgeon General says, well, we can't impose travel restrictions because of equity, we're trying feverishly to find a way to get around that equity crap, but, you know, we have to pretend to give a damn, and this one, this is a little bit too much. They caught a lot of hell out of New York, if you remember. When New York imposed the no glove, no love policy, the no vaccine, no eating in a restaurant, no shopping in a store, no going to the movie, no nothing. Basically, the get back in your place, black and brown people policies that New York City has. They call a lot of hell from that. So now they're like, ugh. We love flexing that muscle, but we really wish we could do it without really getting called out for our racism. So they're still working on that one. Meanwhile, we're still working on herd immunity, which at some point you have to reach, right? Wouldn't you think? But I mean, especially if this is as communicable as President Fauci and the others would have you believe, as these Democrats would have you believe. Well, what is herd immunity? President Fauci was asked about this, and he doesn't know. He doesn't know what herd immunity is anymore. Now, this means, of course, in the past, he's spoken rather definitively about what constitutes herd immunity, which is ironic and again goes back to why he has such little credibility with so many of the American people and why he should never be on television at all. He's just a terrible messenger. It's not that he's expected to be perfect and right all the time. It's that he pretends he is perfect and right all the time. And he does so not by declaring it, but by accepting the fawning coverage of him. It's got to be a hell of a thing for the ego, and never admitting when he is wrong. On the rare occasions when he has been confronted, like when they said, hey, you used to say masks were a waste of time, don't get masks. And, well, I said that because I didn't want there to be a shortage of masks. What are you going to do? Blah, 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 blah. But he was saying in private, masks are garbage, especially cloth masks. There's no point in doing that. You'd be better off not wearing a mask than putting a handkerchief around your face. And he just won't admit it. He won't say, you know what, I was wrong. I was wrong. It happens. On everything, really. So on herd immunity, he's asked this morning about herd immunity. And listen to his answer. He doesn't know. He doesn't know. Just keep getting a shot. Shut your mouth. Stop questioning. There's a goal over there, over the horizon, somewhere. We'll probably get to it. Shut your mouth and do what you're told. That's essentially what he says.
Do you have a percentage in mind of Americans that need to be vaccinated before we reach a point to really suppress this virus and actually be on the winning side of things? Is it 80%? Is it 85%? Is it 90% of Americans?
Joe, we don't know. And, you know, anytime you give a number, someone will poke holes in it. The one thing that I say, and I think it's as close to the truth as you can get, is you will know it when you see it. You should get us here in the United States should get as many people vaccinated as we possibly can. And when we get to the point where it is that critical number that we are not sure of what it is, you're going to see the level of infections plummet very, very low and maybe even disappear.
Now, what's weird is we've already seen the numbers of infections plummet and nearly disappear. It was just a few months ago. Remember that? Remember that? Like, oh, wow, we're getting there. The numbers are disappearing. And that was when Biden comes out and says, well, if you behave yourselves on the 4th of July, you can have a couple of friends over and grill. And everybody did. And he said, well, no longer have to wear the masks because, oh, glory be, it's we've reached it. And there were states across the country reporting zero new COVID cases daily for several stretches. The average went down to like one or two or seven or something like that. And then what happened? Things went haywire again. Things went crazy again. Now, how did that happen? How do you explain that? They don't try to explain that. Fauci just says, well, we'll reach herd immunity when we reach it, and you'll know it when we see it. Well, will we know it when we see it? Didn't we already kind of see it? Didn't we? Let's get in the Wayback Machine back to December of last year, 2020, if you're playing the home game. And this is President Fauci at the time talking about, we'll get to a normal soon because the cases will disappear as we reach basically herd immunity. This was back in December. It was very close. He doesn't give a percentage in this case, but he has said 60% in the past, and he has said 70% in the past. And here he is just talking about the general concept of it back in December, remember.
The real bottom line is, when do you get the majority, the overwhelming majority of the population vaccinated so you can get that umbrella of herd immunity? And I believe if we're efficient about it and we convince people to get vaccinated, we can accomplish that by the end of the second quarter of 2021, namely by the end of the late spring, early summer. I believe we can get there by then, so that by the time we get into the fall, we can start approaching some degree of relief where the level of infection will be so low in society, we can start essentially approaching some form of normality.
What happened there, Tony? What happened there? We got there relatively sort of on that timetable. Early summer, late spring, the numbers went down, and then the numbers came back again. How did that happen? What is it, and what is going on? See, you're not allowed to ask that question, and that's the problem. You're not allowed to ask that question. There are these blaring questions you need to ask, and you're not allowed to. Well, The Atlantic magazine is reporting on something along these lines. It's the numbers that you're seeing reported on the news nightly, the numbers you're seeing reported everywhere, the number of hospitalizations. And you're told these hospitals, they're overflowing with COVID patients. They're over, you know, we had the story last week, Rolling Stone. People are eating so much horse paste that they can't even get into the hospital. They're overdosing on horse paste. That gunshot patients can't get into the emergency room. So many COVID patients everywhere, you can't get medical care almost anywhere. What you don't see is real proof of that. You hear anecdotal testimonials. The one bit of footage I have seen from a hospital overwhelmed was from a very small hospital. I think it was in, it might have been in Oklahoma, it might have been in Kansas. Can't remember exactly. But it was a doctor feverishly hunting for a, no, it was in Texas. It was a small town in Texas because they were trying to ship a cancer patient to Houston. And they had something like, it was either 8 or 12 ICU beds. That's how small the hospital was. And of course, they were full. One of them was a cancer patient that they were desperately trying to get to a place because they couldn't, the hospital was so small, they couldn't treat this cancer patient with what needed to be treated. So they eventually found a hospital to take her. But it was bizarre that's the only footage I've seen, firsthand story of a hospital actually overwhelmed. And it was a tiny hospital that couldn't even treat a cancer patient. That's how small it is. But you hear the stories all the time. These hospitals are being overwhelmed. The number of hospitalizations are through the roof. Problematic. We must do something. Hospitalizations. Well, The Atlantic has a piece today, the title, "Our Most Reliable Pandemic Number is Losing Meaning." Turns out that three liberal universities, Ivy Leagues amongst them, including Harvard, and Harvard, of course, wouldn't lie now, would Harvard? Harvard Medical School, Tufts Medical Center, and the Veterans Affairs Health System, decided to study whether or not people were hospitalized because of COVID or with COVID. Now, that might not seem like a big dramatic difference, but it is. Because why? Because we are told routinely, regularly, that the vast majority of people who get COVID have no symptoms whatsoever, don't even know they have it. That's why when they increase testing, they find more people positive. Like, whoa, what's going on? And there's Earl sitting over there going, I don't feel anything, but you're telling me I've got this. Okay. Then the same sort of rationale would apply to people who are hospitalized, would it not? Would it not? Well, those three prestigious universities, ladies and gentlemen, found that about half the people who were hospitalized and categorized as being hospitalized because of COVID actually were hospitalized with COVID. They were hospitalized for something else, something not COVID-related. Right? They just happened to have it. Now, if you're in a hospital where there's a lot of COVID going around, there's a good possibility you could catch COVID. Right? But if you're in there because you broke your leg, if you're in there because of kidney failure, if you're in there because you, were in a car accident or whatever, you're not hospitalized because of COVID. You're hospitalized with COVID. So if half the people, or 40 to 45% to be precise, according to the study, are hospitalized with COVID and not because of COVID, then that gives you a whole different perspective on the potential deadliness of this disease, does it not? It does. It should. Wait, I apologize. I misread the study. The numbers are even more dramatic. I was reading from the Atlantic article about early on in this Atlantic article, it was not a lot higher, but a little bit higher. Originally, back in May, doctors in California decided to look into the same sort of thing. How many people are hospitalized because of COVID and how many people are hospitalized just with COVID? Because again, it's a very important difference if you want to find out how deadly this disease is. Not saying it's not deadly at all, just saying you want to know as accurately as possible what the hell is going on with this thing. So out in California, they found that it was 40 to 45% of the people that hospitalized were hospitalized with COVID, not because of COVID. Now comes those three Ivy League schools. The Atlantic writes, the authors of the paper out this week took a different track to answer a similar question. This time for adults, instead of meticulously looking at why a few hundred patients were admitted to a pair of hospitals, they analyzed the electronic records for nearly 50,000 COVID hospital admissions at more than 100 VA hospitals across the country. They then checked to see whether each patient required supplemental oxygen or had blood oxygen levels below 94%. The latter criterion is based on the National Institutes of Health's definition of severe COVID. If either of those conditions was met, the authors classified the patients as having a moderate to severe disease. Otherwise, the case was considered mild or asymptomatic. Again, not perfect, but our government has done such a piss-poor job of tracking this thing and collecting data that we're never going to have good numbers. We're never going to learn really much of anything out of this. The study found that from March 2020 through early January 2021, before vaccination was widespread, and before the Delta variant had arrived, the proportion of patients with mild or asymptomatic disease was 36%. Okay? from mid-January through the end of June 2021, so this is the fresher data. However, that number rose to 48%. 48% of people hospitalized in the first 6 months of this year, after the vaccines, after the Delta variant, were incidentally infected with COVID. They weren't. If you're not suffering any sort of symptoms from COVID, you're not going to be hospitalized because of COVID, right? Why would you do that? You tackle somebody on the street and you go, hey, I'm just going to swab your schnoz. Hey, you've got COVID. Quick, get him an ICU bed. Like, no, I'm perfectly. You tackled me while I was jogging. What are you going to do? No, no. You've got COVID. You must be hospitalized. No. The vast majority of people who are actually diagnosed with COVID, if you do a test for whatever reason and you come back positive and you're asymptomatic, you're like, whoa, wait, I did this because of a work requirement, going to a conference or whatever. Your prescription is go home and isolate for 10 days. If you got the sniffles, once the sniffles stop, you can probably pretty much come out. There is no get that man into a cocoon. We're going to turn everybody into John Travolta, the boy in the plastic bubble. No, that's not how it works. So this finds that almost half, literally, I mean, it's a rounding error, 48% of the people hospitalized with COVID were hospitalized with COVID, not because of COVID, not due to COVID. Again, that dramatically changes the perception of what people view, how people view this pandemic, or at least it should. At least it should. So I was surfing the web, and I came across this, and I found it fascinating because I figured, given the arbitrary nature of how it is that COVID either takes somebody or doesn't take somebody, because again, I had a friend who, at the beginning of this thing, when we knew very little about it, sent around an email. We have a group of like seven guys that email. We've been friends for 15, 20 years. All used to work together at the Heritage Foundation. And we rip each other and just have fun in the emails. And he sent out an email and says, I've got COVID. Got the COVID. And I thought, well, that's it for that guy. He's in his mid to late 50s at the time. Very overweight. Very, very overweight. Wildly unhealthy. Enjoyed a bottle of wine with dinner and enjoys other things and, just not the healthiest of lifestyles at all. And I thought, well, that's it. That's it. This guy's going to die. And so I called him kind of just to see how he was doing, but mostly to kind of say, well, I wanted to see how he was doing and maybe say goodbye because I expected this guy to die. I called him and he was fine, sounded normal. And I said, well, how's it manifesting itself? Like, you feel like crap? Like, no, I feel fine. Like, oh, the only thing that mattered or changed was I lost my sense of smell and taste. That was it. And he lost his sense of smell and taste for about 3 weeks. He said he had about a day or two where he felt a little crummy, which is why he went and got tested. And then that was it. He was fine after. Now, this is before even hydroxychloroquine. This was before anybody knew anything or there were antibodies or anything that anybody could pump into you. It was just all him. And you just look at him and you think, that guy is a walking billboard for comorbidities. That's all he is. There's no way he's going to live through this. And he did. They said it took him 3 weeks to get his sense of smell and taste back. It was beautiful, beautiful. And to tell you how much it changed his life. It was the smell of bacon that he noticed that his smell was back. It was bacon, and then he went and ate the bacon that was being cooked by his wife, and he could taste the bacon. And so I'm like, oh, I'm back. And that was it. You look at this guy, and you pick him out of a lineup. You pick him out of a stadium, and you'd go, that dude, if he gets it, he's dead. And he wasn't. And so this study that I was reading last week was very interesting because they're just now conducting it. More in depth, because somebody finally decided to do some science on this. And they began to look at the reports of people who've died. Now, this is all anecdotal. It doesn't mean anything yet, but it could mean something. And I hope to God that rather than just sinking your teeth into whatever it is, the latest thing that Fauci belches out or Walensky belches out, going, well, there you go. And that there are actual scientists out there following the science and doing some real science, is questioning things, and then setting out to either prove or disprove it. But somebody noticed that in the people who died, there was, I think it was a protein or something that is commonly found in snake venom. It's in everything. Everybody's got a little bit in them. But in the people who died, it was elevated something like 10 times. Because your body's made up of all sorts of weird things. And it's part of this and part of that and part of the other thing. And people with this particular protein that is commonly found in snake venom, with elevated levels, abnormally elevated levels, like 10 times the normal level, were the one, they found that in those people who've died of COVID. Now, it could be something that simple. It could be. There are certain diseases that affect people differently based on your blood type, based on all sorts of factors. You can, you know, people smoke and die of lung cancer in their 30s. People will smoke and die of getting hit by a bus or skydiving accident in their 90s. The human body, we can only get generalizations. The human body acts differently for everybody. We are all unique in our DNA, not other characteristics, but in our DNA. And so it is worthy of note and study that if this virus impacts, if there's some sort of common trait beyond the comorbidities, maybe the comorbidities are more common in other people, or maybe they're also a factor. But if it is something, because you've seen a lot of people, and I've seen a lot of people, and that are, you know, you wouldn't look at and think, well, that guy's got a gravitational pull. Like, there was a guy in radio, a guy named Phil Valentine. I didn't really know Phil. I got drunk with Phil like twice in my life. But Phil was a very thin guy. The exact opposite of my friend. They're about the same age. My friend might be a little bit younger, but they both liked having drinks at social events. But my friend seemed wildly unhealthy compared to Phil Valentine. If you just looked at them, if you were picking a team of people to play any sport where activity was necessary and cardio was going to be a factor, you would choose Phil 1,000 times over my friend. But Phil Valentine was hospitalized for a month with COVID. Then he died. He was, I think, maybe 63. And my friend, you'd think that's it. And he's fine. I went golfing with him about a month ago. Takes forever to swing the golf club, but, you know, he's a good dude. It's just a bizarre thing. And so there has to be something else. And if it is this weird protein that some people have more of than others and it makes you susceptible, that would be incredibly useful to know. Because then you could just test for that and say, well, all right, you've got it. You need to get the shot. Or you need to be taking special precautions. Whereas you don't have very many of that at all. And if they can prove that that's it, then you say, you don't have much to worry about. Good for you. Maybe you could find a way to treat the symptoms, the problems of COVID, if you know what causes it. Maybe there's a way to remove some of that protein, to neutralize some of that protein or whatever. That's the kind of research we should have been doing over the course of the last year and a half. Any kind of research possible. Instead, we're spending more money on climate change than we are on researching anything related to COVID-19. We're spending more money on the common cold than we are with that. We're not interested. The NIH is not seemingly interested in researching COVID-19 at all. Because I think maybe they're afraid that then if they discover something like it is this particular protein, that, or if they discover that ivermectin is an effective treatment, then suddenly all the emergency powers, all the emergency funding, all the emergency everything, all the glory that they are basking in, marinating into their bones, goes away. goes away and they don't matter anymore. And there is nothing as hollow as when the spotlight goes off of you, that hollow feeling. To a lesser extent, if you've ever done a play or you've ever done any big event or even like the couple of days after your wedding and the glow, like that was a lot of fun. And you have some big event, you're like, this was awesome. And you wish you could do that every day, but you can't. You can't do it every day. I've done a lot of plays. You go there and you have a great time. And then you have this blowout cast party and everybody's having fun. And you sit there and you think, this is the feeling I want to keep forever. And you wake up the next day and it's over. The play's done. It had its run. You're not really going to see those people anymore. I still keep in touch with like one guy that I was in plays with. Two guys that I was in plays with. That's it. Facebook gives you more, but that moment is gone. You wish you could stay forever. And if they can keep the paranoia going, the people who are ruling the country right now will be able to keep that feeling going. That's dangerous because the people who, anybody who has that feeling needs that feeling taken away from them as quickly as possible. If that feeling is only gotten through having power or authority over others. That's pretty simple. You should not have, and you should not base your life on having power over others. Especially in the United States of America, if you're a government official and you want that authority over other people, maybe you need it for a second, but it should be ripped back from you as quickly as humanly possible. And it doesn't seem like our government is doing anything to determine whether or not we learned anything from this that might be useful, that might cause a return to normal. Just like that audio from Australia I had yesterday where they're like, hey, just because we reach 80% and then other people are freed because they're vaccinated doesn't mean the unvaccinated are free. No, they'll always find a way to keep you. Once they put you in chains, they'll always find a way to keep you in chains until you rip off those chains yourself. Period. End of story. Now, I went and I looked up the study about snake venom, or the hypothesis about snake venom. You can find it if you just search COVID-19 and snake venom. There's a lot of different stories out there. It's not national media, but various local outlets. This one comes from ABC 15 out in Arizona, because it's the University of Arizona. It said snakes are starting to play a big role in the COVID-19 research. This is just from September 2nd. Scientists from the University of Arizona have discovered an enzyme similar to one found in rattlesnake venom that could be driving COVID-19 deaths. Quote, we found evidence that there was an enzyme, a snake-like enzyme, in the blood of people who were in extraordinarily high levels, says Dr. Floyd Clifton, or Chilton, a senior author of a study at the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Scientists have worked on this study for the past year and a half. It was recently published in the Journal of Clinical Investigation. The snake-like enzyme is found in healthy people at low levels to prevent bacterial infections. In severe cases of COVID-19, it's doing the opposite. Quote, those high levels of this enzyme are looking at those tissues in the organs and saying, you look like bacteria. Let's shred your membranes. Let's put these organs out of their misery, says Dr. Chilton. Dr. Chilton says that what's even more remarkable is where we can go from here in the fight against the pandemic. Quote, can we come up with some specific therapeutics that will not care which variant is coming toward it? Can we come up with specific therapies to address this devastating disease? Now, we don't know if this is true or not. If this is it could be a factor, it could be the factor, it could be just a weird correlation. But if you've ever seen anybody or you know how somebody who's been bitten by a venomous snake and how they react, it starts attacking the organs. It makes it very difficult to breathe in a lot of cases, which is very similar to COVID. It attacks the lungs. These lungs, people with COVID are not filling up with mucus. It's not like a pneumonia, although it's called COVID pneumonia. They're having difficulty breathing. The damage in many cases, they call it broken glass, is the lungs are permanently damaged internally. They're not filled up with mucus. Some, like I say, some are. Every body responds differently. But they are having difficulty getting oxygen, breathing. A lot very similar to a serious venomous snake bite that will eventually kill you. Your organs will shut down. Now, if they can test, imagine if, even if nothing comes of this, as far as a treatment, which I don't think that you, if you can identify which enzyme it is, I believe you can find a way to lower that enzyme level in people. But imagine if you could go have a test and say, since everybody has this enzyme in their bodies, it's naturally occurring, and you find out you've got a very low level of it, you are at a safe level. If upon study, you can discover that if you have a low level of this enzyme, you're not going to die from COVID. Or you're very, very, very unlikely, even more than the less than 1% mortality rate that already exists. That could explain why there is such a low mortality rate. Could explain to identify, ideally identify the people who are most likely to die. Maybe it is an enzyme that builds up in your body over time because of the food you consume or whatever, and that's why it disproportionately impacts the elderly. We have no idea. It would be nice if our government studied this stuff and had been studying this stuff all along rather than the University of Arizona stumbling upon this and then studying it. It would be nice if there were massive, large, huge-scale studies where we would know answers by now, and it would get published in a massive journal, an important journal, rather than some journal nobody's ever heard of. But it's baby steps. This is worth investigating, because I'll never believe that there aren't some similarities, major similarities, in all the people who died from COVID or with COVID or whatever. And we will probably never know because we didn't bother to really capture all of that data successfully. So what we have is what we have, and we can only do the best with what we have. And the University of Arizona seems to be doing that. Good for them. Hopefully something can be gleaned from this. Hopefully it's a wake-up call rather than just going, yeah, but still, get vaccinated. All right, well, you can do both. You can argue with people, still get vaccinated, but you can actually study to find out, because if the vaccine, quote-unquote vaccine, not really a vaccine, more of an immunity booster, if those don't work, maybe they won't work on people with this elevated enzyme. Maybe they won't. Maybe they won't work very long on people with this elevated enzyme. Maybe we should be testing people for this enzyme. I don't know. But I think that the people in charge should be trying to find out. That's just my thought anyway. I could be wrong, but I rarely am. As you watch these leftists do everything, you have to recognize that they are complete and total frauds. They will not, do not, ever hold themselves to the same standards that they hold others to. They will not allow for it. They do not demand it. They won't accept it. They will never be held to those standards. So when you've got somebody like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as this Stars and Stripes report indicates, General Mark Milley going, I must call, Donald Trump is so unstable that I must call China and tell them, reassure them, we're not going to attack you. And if we are, I'll call you first. And that's okay. How is that okay? That's what Stars and Stripes reporting is in the Bob Woodward book. I know it's Bob Woodward and Robert Costa. I know Robert Costa a little bit. I think Bob Woodward is co-authoring books now because he's getting too old. So they're trying to pass the torch over there at the Washington Post as this is their guy. Whatever. But to sit there and for a general to do this, there's no way you're going to convince me that this isn't treason. If you're really fearful that China might preemptively attack the United States because China is under the misbegotten belief that the United States might attack China, there is a chain of command for that in the military. And if you run that up the flagpole and you go to the president of the United States, if you're General Milley, and you say, look, we need to do something here because China is going to bomb us or bomb our interests or whatever, or they might, because they think you're going to try and kill them. I think once you say it out loud, you go, that sounds really stupid. I probably shouldn't have said that. China doesn't give a damn. But still, that is the proper course of action. What I want to know is, how is it that a general, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, can make a call to a top Chinese general and it not be noted by anybody? How's that possible? How can you just have this relationship and nobody knows about it until some nosy reporter from the Washington Post decides to make a call? Clearly, somebody knew about this because they told Woodward and Costa. So where in the hell was the reporting at the time? Why didn't word reach the president at the time? I suspect pretty heavily that Donald Trump, as president, would have fired General Milley immediately, if not sooner. Again, the story from Stars and Stripes. Twice in the final months of the Trump administration, the country's top military officer was so fearful that the president's action might spark war with China that he moved urgently to avert armed conflict, calling their top general over there twice and reassuring him one time, look, if we're going to attack you, I promise I'll give you the heads up. I'll give you the coordinates where you can, if we're going to attack you, I'll give you the coordinates where you can attack us first. And you can definitely win this thing if you try to attack us. That's essentially what General Milley is doing here. That is why I say what he did, it sure as hell sounds a lot like treason. If he did it, then he needs to be removed from office and he needs to be tried for treason. There needs to be a court-martial here. Doesn't matter what you think of the President of the United States. There are mechanisms in place to handle if you truly believe that the President of the United States cannot be trusted. Why wouldn't General Milley resign then? He could have resigned and immediately raised a big, huge stink about, oh my goodness, this guy is such a nut. He's ready to go to war with China. I can't be a party to this. He's so unstable. Blah, 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 blah. He could have made a big show. My God, could you imagine the media celebrity he would have been immediately? Immediately, he would have been the biggest media celebrity ever in history. Book deals would have been thrown at him. TV contracts. Rachel Maddow would have been all over him. Oh, please come on my show. I love you. I love you. I love you. Could have. That would have been the principled thing to do. But as we've learned through the retreat in Afghanistan that Biden organized with the help of boneheads like General Milley, no one in this administration, and that includes General Milley and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, no one has any integrity. No one has any character to stand up and do the right thing. They'll do it in an underhanded way. They'll sit there and talk about, oh, Afghanistan was a wonderful success. Anthony Blinken is up on Capitol Hill the last 2 days talking about the Afghan withdrawal. Even some Democrats are sitting there saying, dude, this was a horrible disaster. How are you even trying to sit here and polish this turd? But they are not really pressing the issue. And of course, there are some Republicans who are just too stupid and go off on tangents and irrelevant things and undermine any sense of accountability. But there is no push at all and no sense of honor or duty in any of these people that they should go, oh, you know what? I'm not going to resign, but things could have gone better. We did screw up a little bit. There's none of that. There is no reflection whatsoever. It is a reflective response. It is, we did no wrong. Period. We will not give an inch. The media, by and large, has stopped asking these questions. Have you noticed that? Have you also noticed that Anthony Blinken, aside from his stupid name, like honestly, put the H in there, Anthony Blinken is still insisting that there are about 100 Americans left in Afghanistan who want to come out. Still 100. In the past week, we've been inundated with, we've getting Americans out. The flight, the Taliban. Why? The Taliban is being super duper cooperative. They're just wonderful now. They're some of the best people to work with. And now we have them letting Americans out. We've got 40 on this flight and 52 on this flight. And we're getting the Americans. We were told when Biden retreated from Afghanistan that there were only between 100 and 200 Americans left in there, mostly closer to 100, not that many, and no big deal. And we have assurances from the terrorist regime we just ceded the entire country to that they will allow those people to come out when they want to. Just a matter of getting the flights together, which kind of would make anybody with a brain go, wait, so if you're going to rely on the terrorists to get the flights together, you just controlled the airport. You just gave up control of the airport. Like you had all the control you would need, theoretically, to get somebody out on a big flying metal bird. You know, you just ceded that to people with a 7th century mentality. Maybe that's not the best way to go. But they're starting to allegedly let Americans out. I find it curious that we haven't seen or heard from any of these Americans yet, don't you? These would be people who could testify to either the fact that they're being treated well by the Taliban in accordance with Joe Biden's deal he struck with these terrorists, or could say, we're not being treated super well. In fact, we tried to get to the air. You know, we're not, the government isn't going to offer them up because they will all have stories of, we tried desperately to get to the airport. We tried desperately to be evacuated when everybody else was being evacuated, when we took out a whole bunch of people who aren't related to the United States of America. But the Taliban wouldn't let us through. The terrorists wouldn't let us through. We were beaten. We were whatever. They were not going to be cooperative. You'd get those stories, and that kind of negates a whole lot of what Democrats have been trying to sell, what the White House has been trying to sell to the American public. So you can't have that. You're not going to be given that. There's nobody going to allow that in the White House. So where are these people that have allegedly been evacuated? And why is it, like some sort of sleight of hand magic trick, that after 2 weeks of relentlessly working with terrorists to get Americans who want to be out, that we still have the same amount of Americans in Afghanistan after we've been told we've evacuated a whole bunch of them? How does that math work? And you have to remember, you're dealing with people whose math was, there are 10 to 15,000 Americans in Afghanistan we have to evacuate. And then when it's all said and done, we've successfully evacuated 5,100 Americans. We got everybody except for maybe 1 to 200 of them. And you do that math and you go, no, that's about a third, maybe a third. And they go, nope, it's a great success. Stop questioning. So don't count on these people. There's the new math, and then there's liberal math, where they just go, numbers don't matter. Just make things up. Whatever. But the reason I'm not playing Secretary of State Antony Blinken audio up here is because there's literally nothing he says that matters. There's literally nothing he's saying that matters. You got some members of Congress yesterday saying, you should resign. And Democrats coming back saying, no, you should never resign. You should stay in that job forever. You're the best. But in general, nothing is going to come of this. Oversight, even if you pulled out a smoking gun right now, and even the very few Democrats who are you got to admit that the evacuation of Afghanistan was screwed up. You got to admit. And those are only like senators like Bob Menendez of New Jersey who have constituents there. They have American citizens who were abandoned. They're the ones coming in and saying, wait a second, maybe it wasn't so great. Maybe how you handled this could have been done a little bit better. But that's about the extent of it. Nobody's calling for resignations. Nobody's calling for heads except for a few Republicans in the House. Even Republicans in the Senate are too polite to call for resignations by and large. So there's no good audio coming out of this unless you really enjoy audio of peacocks strutting around. You've got 5 minutes. Well, let me tell you how outraged I am and why I'm outraged. And this is going to be great for campaign fundraising. And that's all I have to say. I yield back the balance of my time. Congress is the absolute worst organization on the face of the earth when it comes to investigations. Republicans are just about the worst creatures at that. There is genuine information that the American public needs to know that could be gleaned from these people, or at least pressured. You ask the questions. You can't make somebody answer, but you can ask the questions repeatedly and humiliate them for refusing to answer if they in fact refuse to answer. And instead, they're just kind of going, ho-hum, whatever. It's pathetic. That's why I'm not playing this Blinken stuff, because there's nothing good coming out of it. There's nothing interesting coming out of it that is actually useful. It's great TV. Oh, you can see some of the clips of it on cable news. Because why? Because it's great TV, but there's no information being gathered. It's posturing. It's dodging. There's no pressure to really, truly answer. And there's no real answer actually being sought. Far too many times these politicians just want to be seen asking the questions. For my mind, that's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. Get Milley up there and get him to answer to what he's alleged to have done in the Trump administration. That's treason. That's serious. If you're not going to be serious with Blinken, get Milley up there. They won't, because they're not serious people unless they're up for election. If you lived in New York last night, you might have noticed a lack of smugness in your neighborhood. All the smug was gathered down by the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It was the annual Met Gala, where all Anna of Wintour, who Meryl Streep's character in The Devil Wears Prada was based on, where all they're all down there talking about charity. I'd always heard about the Met Gala, and I'm like, what is the Met Gala for? Is it like raising money to fight homelessness? Because every celebrity in the world, they go, oh my God, we must go to the Met Gala. It's the place to be. It's the place to be seen. It's wonderful. It's $30,000 a person. You think, well, that's going to raise a ton of money. What is this wonderful cause for which all of liberal New York gets together? Is it ending homelessness? Is it fighting AIDS? Is it helping people not get evicted? No. It's a fundraiser to benefit the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute. I'm not kidding. It's about playing dress up. It is about fashion. That's why Anna Wintour runs it. She doesn't raise money for, you know, the children. Oh, the poor children. Unless the children are like wannabe fashion designers, then she's there for them. Otherwise, she doesn't care. To hell with the little people. Stay away from her townhome. She'll spray you with mace. But that's what, $30,000 a piece. Every celebrity in the world, every musician, politician in New York, everybody, man, the actors, the actresses, the rich moneyed people dropping 30 grand a head to go to this thing. And they're there to raise money so that spoiled rich kids can get really nice fabrics to make costumes so that one day they might end up on Broadway, which is apparently reopening today. Who cares? But, the theater community is suffering. So what? I don't care. But why are they more special than anybody else? Why is the theater community? As somebody who used to be in theater, I can tell you, theater people are some of the worst people on the planet. But why should we care about, theater people, they finally get their livelihoods back. Meanwhile, the government is shutting down other businesses. Other governments are shutting down other businesses. What about I'd much care more about the restaurateurs in New York City than I do about the Broadway people, because the Broadway people made a pretty good living. They made a pretty good living. And the people who are making the money, the real money, the people who wrote the plays and the producers, they're making serious money. They could have afforded to easily pay those people. They probably did. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. But why am I supposed to care about that when you don't seem to care about bartenders and waitresses and cooks and all of that? So, no, forgive me if I don't celebrate the reopening of Broadway. Just forgive me if I don't celebrate the raising of tens of millions of dollars for the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute in New York City. But amongst the attendees at the Met Gala for the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Wait a second, $30,000 a head? The queen of socialism there? Oh, don't worry. She knew how to stick it to these liberals who all uniformly support her. She wore a white dress with "Tax the Rich" written across the back, with "rich" being written right across her butt, her ample butt, which is appropriate. I mean, it was the first time, you got to give her credit, it was the first time she removed her head from there in a long time. So she's got that going. Says she tweeted out, "The medium is the message." You know, the medium is the location of your head most of the time. What's funny is she went there to the gala with the designer of her dress to be seen, to hang out with her donor class. That's who these people are. They're wealthy people, give to AOC left and right. She's a celebrity. She doesn't need their money. Doesn't need their money at all. She sported a $995 handbag on top of it. Now, curiously, there were other liberals there. Megan Rapinoe was dressed wearing a red suit with a blue shirt with silver stripes on it. And she carried a handbag or clutch or whatever the hell you call it. It says, "In gay, we trust." Now, if you say "in straight, we trust," you're a hate monger. But I wouldn't trust Megan Rapinoe as far as I could throw her, half the distance I could throw her, because I think I could probably throw her a little ways. There was another actress, Delling Vane is her last name. She's wearing a shirt that says "Peg the Patriarchy." Hey, oh, they hate the patriarchy. But Claire Dellingvane's ancestry, her family, is European royalty. You want to talk about the patriarchy? There you go, right there. They are Carla Dellingvane's family. Here's just a little bit about Carla Dellingvane's family. And she's wearing "Peg the Patriarchy" shirt. Dellingvane's grandfather is Condé Nast executive Nicholas Coleridge. Her godmother is actress Dame Joan Collins. Her maternal grandfather was publishing executive and English Heritage chairman Sir Jocelyn Stevens, the nephew of magazine publisher Sir Edward George Warris Hilton, and the grandson of newspaper proprietor Sir Edward Hilton, first baronet. Her paternal grandmother was the socialite Angela Margot Hamar Greenwood. Her paternal great-grandparents were the Canadian-born British politician Hamar Greenwood, first Viscount Greenwood, and Marjorie Greenwood, Viscountess Greenwood. Her maternal grandmother, Jeannie Sheffield, was lady-in-waiting to Princess Margaret, through one of her maternal great-grandfathers, Sir Leon Lawson Fidel Phillips, 3rd Baronet Dellingvane, descends from the Anglo-Jewish Phillips baronets. Two of her ancestors on that line served as mayor of London. This is the chick wearing the "Peg the Patriarchy" shirt. Then you've got AOC with "Tax the Rich" written across her ass. And then you have another member of Congress wearing women. God, these people. By the way, I'm just distracted by all these pictures. The tennis star who could not be bothered to answer questions. Remember her? She's, I'm so distressed. And negative questions are bumming me out, man. I can't participate in this. It's just wrong. And I'm going to quit the French Open because she showed up to the gala. She's got some ridiculous costume on because they all dress up like lunatics. She is, of course, on the red carpet posing for all of these pictures with her hair that's literally like 2 feet out to each side of her head. You can't handle this. It's too much anxiety. Tennis. The attention that you're giving you. But, of course, you have to show up to the gala. You have to support the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute. Screw the poor. And you have to find a way to have something to complain about so that you can then go back and be the victim. Because that is the currency of the left. That's what makes the world go round. That's who these leftists are. It's a scary, scary bit of hypocrisy that a normal human being, if they'd committed it, would go, "My God, $30,000 a piece. I probably shouldn't do this. I probably shouldn't do this." But no, AOC went and she thought, well, I'll just cause a stir. I'll wear a "Tax the Rich." Carolyn Maloney, member of Congress, Equal Rights for Women Now. She's wearing this dress. And every picture you see here is of these leftists up in New York, these rich leftists, not wearing masks. But if you look in the background, all of these wealthy liberal hypocrites are standing around not wearing masks, being interviewed, making sure they get their picture taken in their big pearly whites and everything. And there's AOC with her giant mouth and her gigantic teeth. She could eat a sandwich through a fence, I swear to God. She's sitting there smiling. And in the background, there's all these people, servants dressed in black, the people working it, all wearing masks. Not a single elitist leftist is wearing a mask, but all the little people are, because you have to be told your place. You have to be shown your, learn your place, people. We are the important people. We are the beautiful people. It's kind of a sick description of what somebody would call rich. But AOC is running around talking about how her and the woman who designed her dress, they are the middle class. They're storming this thing to show what middle working class women can do and really stick it out there. And like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Aurora James is the designer. AOC said, proud to work with Aurora James as a sustainably focused black woman immigrant designer who went from starting her dream at a flea market in Brooklyn to winning the awards against all odds, blah, 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 blah. And then you look up Aurora James and her boyfriend is worth $100 million. I don't know what her biography is. I don't know what she's worth. But I can tell you that somebody from humble beginnings does not often roll in circles with a male socialite worth $100 million whose family was co-founders of Lehman Brothers. You know, I'm just saying. I've met some very wealthy people in my life, but we didn't hang out all that much because they could do things I couldn't afford when I was a kid. And like, that's just how the world works. But she's sitting there going, oh, we're two strong women of color, middle class, blah, 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 blah. No, you're not. You're a raging hypocrite. You're rolling around with rich liberal donors. You're preaching to the choir. And oh, by the way, the Democrats' tax plan that they're actively working on today in the House of Representatives repeals the SALT tax cap, meaning it would be a massive tax cut for the rich, the very same people that AOC is sitting there partying with, living the dream, wearing her white dress with the red tax the rich across her ass. She's looking at them and saying, you're going to get massive tax cuts if I get my way. You can then deduct the high rate of income taxes that the state and localities that you live in charge you. You can deduct that from your federal income taxes. It'll screw over people who live in states that are fiscally responsible. That doesn't matter. Fiscal responsibility is the kryptonite to the left. It is not allowed on the left. It is irrelevant on the left. That's how you can talk about taxing the rich and right tax the rich in jewels on a $995 Nile handbag. And that's, of course, before tax. And you can show up at a $30,000 a head fundraiser for costuming in a dress that says tax the rich and think that somehow you're being a rebel. Somehow you're being different. Somehow you're caring about people. Yeah, you're going to get rich kids to be able to costume. Congratulations, hero. By the way, AOC responded to critics about her attending the $30,000 a head thing wearing a $5,000 dress, clutching a $1,000 purse, and no matter what she graffitied on it. It's a lot like designer grunge or designer punk. It's not really what's going on. It's a little bit of a fraud. And she said, she responded in writing, I thought about the criticism I'd get, but honestly, I and my body have been so heavily and relentlessly policed from all corners politically since the moment I won my election that it's kind of become expected and normalized to me. The irony is that women in power take the prospect of criticism to be cautious in their actions. They are then criticized for being inauthentic and too calculated. Ultimately, the haters hated, and the people who are thoughtful were thoughtful. But we all had a conversation about taxing the rich in front of the very people who lobby against it. Who? Everybody there was a liberal. They're not lobbying against it. And then she goes on to talk about, oh, especially, honestly, our culture is deeply disdainful and unsupportive of women of color, of women, especially women of color and working class women and LGBTQ/immigrant, etc., from the bottom up. Now we're disdainful of jackasses, AOC, and you're a pile of human garbage. And so, yes, we should be disdainful toward you, because you're a bad person. You're a fraud. And that's all. That's all. It's nothing personal. It's just very personal. It's a disgusting creature. Good God. I don't know how people look up to that thing and go, oh, this is great. This is wonderful. Tax the rich. Oh, all right. To a rich event. All right. Did you get any money from them? Because you could get, everybody there could write a check instead of $30,000 to the costuming department of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. They could write a $30,000 check to the federal government. And, you know, but no, they could write $30,000 check to the homeless shelter down the street, the soup kitchen. But no, they just wanted to be seen with Rihanna at the event for costuming. Because it's the place to be, because you don't want to be on the wrong side of Anna Wintour. And AOC had people, the masked, unwashed, carrying the train of her dress as she left to go to her limo to go home, as every good member of the proletariat does. Disgusting. Lastly, I want to play this clip from Joe Biden in Idaho. Joe Biden was out in Idaho talking about forest work and green energy and blah, 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 blah. And you're looking at the way that he comports himself and the way he lies. And Joe Biden decided that he had to lie. He talks about how he, as a kid, wanted to work in Idaho. No evidence of this whatsoever. Listen to this insanity.
I grew up in a little town called Claymont, Delaware. And I went to school. I used to tell Frank Church this. I got my first job offer where I wanted, my wife, deceased wife and I, wanted to move to Idaho because we think, not a joke, it's such a beautiful, beautiful state. And I interviewed for a job with Boise Cascade. And in the meantime, there was a war going on. Anyway, but the whole point was that I used to always kid Frank.
Okay, so he wanted to get a job. He interviewed with Boise Cascade in the lumber business out of college, out of law school. You got to presume out of law school because he was married already, allegedly. His wife and him wanted to move to Idaho. Nothing stopping him. So people actually went, because the company Boise Cascade still exists. So people went to them and asked, hey, did this happen? A spokeswoman for Boise Cascade said, quote, we have no record of President Biden's application or of him having worked for the company. We checked our system internally and nothing has turned up. And you really have to wonder at what point, why does a company in Idaho, a lumber company in Idaho, why in the hell would they recruit anybody out of Delaware to come and do anything for them at all, anything whatsoever? It's another lie. It's another BS lie from Joe Biden. And it's about his own biography. He should know better. He theoretically should know better. He's just incapable of knowing when to shut up, when to tell the truth. Maybe his life is just really boring. I don't know. But there's something wrong with this guy. Alrighty, that is all the time we have for today. It's all about, what are you going to say about Norm MacDonald? Norm MacDonald died today. It's horrible. Sad news. Funny, funny dude. I met him once when his book came out at a book event, and he made me laugh, and I made him laugh as he was signing my books, and just seemed like a super cool guy. But damn, he was funny. 61 years old, and a private battle with cancer. Rest in peace, Norm MacDonald. I could just play all Norm MacDonald jokes, because you go down that rabbit hole and you're not going to come up for a while. This is a damn funny dude, and I suggest you do it. Rest in peace, Norm. We'll be back here tomorrow. Thanks for listening.